Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shani, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this. Hello, Leadershifters, and welcome to another episode of the Leadershifter Show with Shani. It is a privilege today to introduce you to our guest who is coming to us from London. His name is Patrick Coutts, and he is the co-founder and head of product at Mindstone, which makes learning faster and easier for adults who are looking to up their own game. So we'll talk about how to access his programs later on. He's got a 20-year background in education that he's taken into the corporate adult learning sphere. So we'll find out how he pivoted to that. And also, I think Patrick deserves to be called a Renaissance man because in addition to Mindstone, he is a songwriter, philosopher, physics enthusiast, and marathon runner. So we'll talk about how that relates to the wisdom that he brings to the world. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Shani. And can I just say what an incredibly generous welcome that was? I'm feeling really upon my mettle now to perform and hopefully seem a little bit, at least a little bit impressive after that amazing intro. So thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you are impressive and unique for sure. And I'm very keen to hear more about what you do because it is a little bit different than some of the other training consultants that I've had on the show who target HR, learning and development as their customer within the adult learning space. So talk to us first about your experience as an educator and what led you to pivot from that to what you're doing now.
I'm going to just begin with a little context for your American listeners that in the British education system, we go through to year 13, what you would call grade 12, right? Yeah. And I was the head of the last 2 years of high school. So I was in charge of what you'd call K-11 and 12. And my job was preparing people for adult life and for the most part for university. And during my career, I became increasingly conscious of the fact that our education system wasn't preparing people very well for university and even worse for adult life. And also that the university experience wasn't preparing them for the workplace either. So I was aware of the fact that we have this system that was created hundreds of years ago in a totally different economic, social, cultural landscape to serve completely different aims. And it's just no longer fit for purpose. And everybody knows this, of course, but the question is what to do about it.
Yeah, I'll interject and say we could say the exact same thing about the American education system.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So I had this frustration that the work that I was doing, although I was judged by the government inspectorate to be an outstanding leader and my school was judged to be outstanding, there was nevertheless this disconnect between my values and my mission as an educator to help people to flourish and to thrive, and the job I was being asked to perform, which felt at times like I was feeding people into a kind of a meat grinder. And the product that came out of the other end was not serving the humanity of the people being fed into the machine, and also not serving the industries, the employers, that were going to be accepting them after that. So it was my good fortune round about the point where this concern was coming to a head to run into an entrepreneur and serial startup founder called Joshua, who is now my chief exec. Mm. And we got into a conversation about his ambitions. He was just wrapping up his exit from his third startup at the time, a company called Super Awesome, which did Internet Safety for Kids, which was just at the time being acquired by Epic Games. And he wanted to do something in the education and learning space. And what got me super excited was the fact that he wasn't looking at it through the lens of the existing landscape. He wasn't looking at it through the lens of employers or the existing education gatekeepers. He was looking at it from the perspective of starting with the learner. And so this is, for me, this is the thing that really sets us apart as a company. And in terms of our mission, is that we are not here to educate. We are here to help people to learn. And although that might seem like kind of a narrow distinction, it means all the world, because learning is centered around the learner, and the learner can own that and take responsibility for it and make informed choices about what they do with their learning and what directions they go in. And it's powered by really human drives like curiosity and ambition and emotional commitment, rather than having an educational experience handed to you by some external party, whether it's an employer or an educator. So that's kind of what made me make the change. And the very last thing I would say about that transition is that, in a weird way, as my life changed, as I left a nearly 20-year career in teaching, the world changed at the same time, because I walked out of school the same day that my colleagues across the country, and indeed across the world, were walking out of their schools due to COVID. And so it seemed like an absolutely magical opportunity to rethink how we look at learning in the context of the global pandemic. Just one tiny little fact, which I find absolutely mind-blowing, and I'm going to share here with you now because I don't want to forget it later, is that studies done in the US actually during the pandemic showed that typically a high school student could do all of the learning that they needed to do in a typical school day in 90 minutes. And so what that meant was the rest of the school day was not primarily about learning. It was about other socioeconomic forces, like freeing up parents to work. It's essentially babysitting. Maybe there's some socialization going on there. Maybe there's some team spirit being built. But I think that's as stark a signal as you could hope to see that the way that we have done things in the past is not the way that we want to do things in the future. So that's a little bit about my story and what prompted me to make the change.
Wow, that is eye-opening to hear that children can do all of the work in a typical school day in 90 minutes. Does that include listening to the lectures?
Well, okay. On the subject of lectures, again, I have to share something with you that I'm ashamed to admit. I had been teaching 15 years before I realized this. The word lecture, of course, comes from the Latin to read, and it originates in the medieval period when there was a scarcity of books, and the most efficient means of communicating content to a group of people, given that scarcity of books, was to have one person who could read stand in front of a group of people who could not and read aloud to them. Books were too expensive to do it any other way. This is an absolutely terrible way of educating, and yet it's still the way we do it in our universities. And if we're honest, many of our businesses too. You know, you walk into an all hands and the chief exec stands up and talks at you for 15 minutes. How much of that time is spent profitably engaged with the content and really thinking hard about it and learning from it is probably very restrictive. So to circle back to your original point about that 90 minutes, does that include the time the teacher spent lecturing? I would ask you, well, how much of that time that the teacher spent lecturing was anyone really listening?
Especially from a Zoom call.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why you've got me with the camera on right now, so you can tell I'm actually paying attention.
Right. It's so true. Wow. And thank you for that history lesson. I had no idea that's what that came from. And you're right. So that isn't just hundreds of years old. That's thousands of years old if it's dating back to the Latin era.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's funny. My mom was a teacher for years. And one of the reasons her students loved her so much was that she didn't lecture very much. she created an immersive, interactive experience for the kids where they actually learned. And, you know, so I've had that as a best practice in my life for years. And now that I do consulting and coaching, and when I'm working with leaders or teams on presentation skills, I don't teach, you know, I mean, we touch a little bit on like eye contact and body language and facial expressions and all that stuff, but that's the easy stuff. I teach them how to facilitate something that they're presenting, because otherwise it's going to go in one ear and out the other, if it even went in one ear.
Absolutely. Now, when you or I were kids, probably the most exciting thing that you could do if you were being naughty at the back of the class was pass around a piece of paper where you were writing notes to your friends. But you've got to remember that kids today have got supercomputers in their pockets. And to imagine that they're going to find like the most interesting thing that mankind has yet invented is not going to be more interesting than the voice at the front of the room, it's really very naive. So you've got to create not just, you know, interesting experiences, but real challenges where it would be impossible to proceed without giving your full attention to the task at hand. And that's always got to be the goal, is ensuring that people are actively engaged, that you're having an aesthetic rather than an anesthetic experience.
Yes, yes, I love that. Okay, so how do you and your partner in Mindstone take those concepts and build your programs that learners can access, and where can they access them?
Okay, so I guess this is the part of the show where I give a little plug to my company, Mindstone. You can find us at www.mindstone.com. Very easy to find. And I'll talk to you just a little bit about the goal of the company, our mission. But let's just start first of all with what Mindstone is today. We're a new startup. We've only been around since COVID, so we started in 2020. And right now, Mindstone is a platform to help people that we call work athletes, people who are passionate about their work and their productivity, and who, like an athlete, train to optimize their performance. So these are people who are consciously making the endeavor to perform better each day, to extract more value out of their day. And the biggest challenge these people face, unsurprisingly, is time. Like, there's just not enough minutes of the day for most successful people to get value out of their day. Correct. So what Mindstone does is it allows you to take all of the content that you encounter online, whether it's podcasts or blog posts or YouTube videos or academic papers and PDF format or email newsletters or images, basically anything at all that you encounter online. You can put it into Mindstone and then you can treat it with the same set of scientifically validated learning tools, including highlighters, flashcards, interleaving, spaced repetition. And these tools allow you to get more value out of it. But actually, the first point of value is just the fact of being able to treat all of those different kinds of content with the same kind of rigor, rather than having different content in different places that you can't really draw it all together and draw out the insights. So that's what Mindstone allows you to do today, free of charge. It's available both as a web app and a mobile app. And we are building out our community of learners. Now, the ambition in the future, as we continue to develop, is to make Mindstone the platform that unlocks the power of informal learning and allows you to signal that to your employers, both for that promotion or to get that new job. Because currently it's extremely hard to show anyone that you're a great learner. It was just shared with me earlier today, actually, a guy from Harvard talking about how 85% of what makes somebody successful in their work is to do with their attitude and their effectiveness as a learner. And only 15% of it is to do with what they already know. But if you think about it, our current model, our current approach, starts with the university degree, which is firstly, the university degree is a record of what you know, not your attitude and not your skills. And secondly, the university degree is not very granular, doesn't provide very much detail. And thirdly, it's out of date. Most of the people you're hiring, they did their degree years ago. So it's completely irrelevant to the question of will this person succeed in this job? But we rely on it because we don't have anything better. And what Mindstone is doing and is going to do more and more in the future is provide that record of your learning skills by saying this person has shown that they are resilient and that they are curious and that they have the reflectiveness to succeed in self-directed learning and get value out of it. So that's the story of the mission to unlock the world's potential from informal self-directed learning. And along the way, also, we want to help people to collaborate more effectively because much of the self-directed learning that currently takes place is kind of stuck in a silo. If I'm learning something, there's no way I can talk to anybody else who's on the same learning journey as me and wanting to find out the same things. So collaboration is another piece of that puzzle that we're wanting to solve for.
That is fascinating. And a long time ago, it occurred to me, like, how do you prove to your employer that you've done things that aren't through them or have some sort of continuing education where there's a formal record of it that you can prove up? So I love that you're able to capture all of these micro learnings, if you will, and show the employer, you know, not just that they're doing it, but the additional skills and knowledge that they're digesting in order to be better utilized in their role and even beyond their roles. It's genius.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm gonna take a little bit of a risk here, and I'm gonna use a catchphrase which some section of your audience are going to be disgusted that I say this word. And the word is blockchain. Now, the reason I'm saying that word is because if you think about it right now, the certificate that you get, the diploma that you get from a work-based learning program or from a university is owned by a gatekeeper. And that gatekeeper is the awarding body, the institution or establishment that gave you that certificate. And what we want to move to is a world in which you own your learning record. But we also want that learning record to be robust. We don't want somebody to be able to just make it up, you know, just type a few words into a Google Doc and magically they've got themselves a certificate. So what we need is a distributed ledger where, although you own your learning record, it can't be tampered with. You can't fake it. And of course, that's precisely the promise of blockchain. So although right now Mindstone doesn't make use of blockchain, this is part of our long-term ambition, is to build out that distributed ledger so that the record of learning is completely robust. And although you own it, there isn't some authority figure somewhere that is issuing that, you nevertheless can't fake it. And therefore, employers can have confidence that they're actually looking at somebody who has the skills that they say they do. And that's what this is ultimately about, is trust, isn't it?
Yep. And it's a wave of the future because, as you already alluded to, learning is, university degrees aren't just outdated decades later. Given the pace of transformation in the economy, in the workplace, in globalization, skills that you learned in your freshman year could be very well archaic by your junior or senior year.
Well, absolutely. And on that point, I just want to say to you that as I transitioned into the tech space, my colleagues recommended to me to read a whole bunch of books, including, I remember the first one that I read was The Lean Startup.
Yeah.
And then as a team, we have a book club and we reread The Lean Startup 2 years later and we decided this is no longer valuable. It's out of date. Now, it was published more like 15 years ago, but the point is that even in the last 2 years, attitudes have changed and the current thinking has moved on. So this is not just the case for your university career or for your professional qualification, but for your ongoing learning in the workplace. And the important thing is not what you learn. The important thing is that you are learning and how you learn. To take a famous phrase and twist it a little bit. It's not what you know, it's how you know.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the science. So pre-show, we were talking about lessons in science of learning for leaders, almost perfect alliteration. Talk to us about some of the scientific basis off of which, you know, you've structured Mindstone.
Okay, so some of the things I'm going to talk about now are well known within the science of learning, but just not very widely practiced in the workplace or by existing learning platforms. For example, probably the most well-validated scientific technique to improve people's ability to recall things that they've learned is something called spaced repetition.
Yeah.
It's a very simple algorithm which brings back to your attention the things you were trying to learn just at the point at which you otherwise would have forgotten them. And research into this has shown that the reason it works so well is because the slight additional effort of recalling something just at that point where it's fading from memory helps to consolidate the creation of the neural pathways which that memory is associated with. And Mindstone has the spaced repetition algorithm built into it. So when you decide to remember something, Mindstone helps you remember it, and it brings it back just at the point where you would have forgotten it. Now, like I say, this is not cutting edge science, but it is cutting edge learning technology for the workplace. Another example of a very similar phenomenon is something called interleaving, which sounds fancy, but really isn't. All interleaving is mix up your topics of learning, study several different things and switch them about, because the links that your brain will make between the things that you're studying, the things you're learning about, will be enhanced by the additional context of the linkages from different topics. So Mindstone automatically shuffles the deck, so to speak, so that all of the different things you're studying, you're presented to them shuffled, and as a result, you are better able to recall what you learned. Finally, a couple of things. Now, this next one, I'm going to dwell on a little bit because it's a brand new discovery. And one that we're still integrating into Mindstone, is to do with trust and perception. This is new discovery just coming out of the psychological journals right now. And it was discovered because of COVID. During COVID, as you know, you, me, and pretty much everybody was on Zoom. And we had a glimpse into the lives of the people that we were Zooming with. Just a little while ago, you introduced me to your cat, for example, who was there on your desk with you. And behind me, you can see the guitars on the wall there and a chart on the wall behind my other shoulder. This glimpse into my life gives the impression that you know more about me than you perhaps do.
Yeah.
But there's something fascinating which we didn't know until the scientific research just in the last year or so, which is it works both ways. The more I know you know about me, the more I will think I know about you, and vice versa. And this is probably due to human evolution, that historically, in the history of our species, it was impossible to know a lot about someone without them knowing a lot about you. Now, the application of this for leaders is extremely powerful. The more you let your colleagues into your life, the more you let them see the environment in which you work, the more they will feel that you know them. Mm-hmm. And the more they will feel they have to be honest with you and open with you, because you know them as well as they feel they know you, because they've looked over your shoulder and they can see the things on your shelf and they feel like they have a personal connection to your life. So in short, the result of the finding is make it personal. As a leader, the more you make it personal, the more you come across as a human being and bring your whole self to work, the more you will be seen as a human. But the really exciting bit is the more your colleagues will feel that you are connecting with them. And that two-way street of open dialogue is one of the most powerful things that we can do as leaders. And it's something which everybody, no matter what your professional role, can do to help enhance those relationships. So right now, I'm going to be blunt. Right now, I'm looking at a backdrop which tells me nothing about who you are. But before we got on the call, I saw your actual background, and I noticed that the armchair sitting behind you was an armchair designed by Eames, great 20th yes. century designer. And so I thought to myself, aha, it's an Eames chair. I've got one of those. I feel like I know Shaney now. I've got one of those chairs down in my lounge. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. And thank you for sharing that background, because it makes you
human. I just took off the fake Zoom background, and you could see my, I mean, I wouldn't say it's messy office, but crowded office. Yes, I have my Eames chair behind me. And you can also see I am a devoted University of Miami Hurricanes fan. I'm not only an alumni, but I'm one of their biggest cheerleaders. You can see my file cabinet with all sorts of, I don't know if you can see it, aromatherapy.
See, we're learning so much about you here. And for the at the price of the professionalism that you can put on show if you so choose, you can let people into your life in a way that actually is authentic and builds trust. So I think that's a powerful lesson for all of us.
I love that. And I'm going to heed that advice from now on. So I do have some clients, especially executive coaching clients, who would push back on that. Mm-hmm. In terms of my personal life. I don't want people to know anything about me. I just want to keep work at work. Mm-hmm. What do you say to those people?
Well, first of all, having boundaries is healthy and a sign of some self-respect and some self-care. But it's probably worth digging into what exactly that person means where they said, I want to keep work and my personal life separate. Because you can bring your whole self to work without bringing your personal life to work. You can be authentically yourself while still curating what parts of yourself you bring to the fore. And so I don't want to suggest that it's as black and white as either you turn off your Zoom background or you turn it on and there endeth the discussion. Mm-hmm. It's rather the case of ask yourself, am I being authentic? And if I am not being authentic, how can I expect my colleagues or the people with whom I consult to bring their whole selves to play? And moreover, and this, again, I repeat myself, but I think it's a point worth repeating. If I bring my whole self and I present authentically, then the people to whom I am talking will feel that I know them better as well. And therefore, I will do a better job as a consultant. This is about building authentic relationships. And the consultant who doesn't care about building authentic relationships is probably not in the right career.
Great, love that answer. Okay, so you alluded just a minute ago to the guitars behind one of your shoulders. So let's talk about your interest in lots of different things besides learning. The guitar playing and songwriting, marathon running, physics, these things. And I know pre-show you said, well, you know, it's not like I'm professional at any of them. But what you did say is there is a relationship between having those passions and your performance at work. So why don't you opine on that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, now I'm going to begin with the easy one, right? I have run 4 marathons in my life, but this year I've set myself a very different goal. I'm aiming to run 20 miles a week. So I'm running 1,000 miles this year, which sounds like a big number, right? But it's only 4 miles a day, you know, for 5 days a week. It's totally doable. But the important part of it is the creation of habits and breaking down those habits into manageable chunks, mm-hmm. and creating patterns and habits in my day which allow me to not have to think very hard about the choices that I'm making. So I go out for a run first thing in the morning because I don't have to think. I'm barely awake at that moment as I pull on my running shoes and I'm out of the door before I've had time to think, oh, it's raining, I don't really want to go. It's too late. I'm already out. I've started. And once I've started, well, it's almost done. So that is a very, very powerful starting point for the building of habits in other parts of your life. Mm. If you anchor a new behavior that you want to turn into a habit in an existing habit that you don't have to make a huge effort to engage with, then that makes it much, much easier to establish the new habit. So the way that I get through my audiobooks for my work book club is I simply listen to audiobooks while I'm running, and I don't need to do any additional effort whatsoever because it's part of the established habit. And so this is a powerful technique for building your productivity by anchoring new habits in old ones. But there's something more I want to say about running, which is the physical activity of engaging in exercise is extremely good for your mental health. This is not up for debate. This is a proven fact.
100%.
And it's also very, very good for entering into almost a meditative state in which you're not really thinking hard about any particular thing, but the mind is ticking away in the background while you are attending to being in your body and feeling the breeze as you jog and the ground beneath your feet. And that opportunity to switch off the conscious processes and allow the unconscious processes to kick in is a very, very powerful way of improving your productivity and also getting to solutions that you otherwise might not have thought about. And I know for a fact that this works because when I take a break, I come back not only refreshed, but also very often with an idea of how to proceed. Now, I don't want to make it sound like I'm somebody who always gets things right. In fact, my strength as a learner lies in the fact that I'm very keen to find out that I'm wrong. And when I do find out that I'm wrong, to stop being wrong. That's one of my biggest goals, is to find out I'm wrong. Get excited about finding out that you're wrong, because that gives you a chance to stop. And so many people will do anything to avoid finding out that they're wrong. And of course, that's holding them back.
Now, yes. As you Brits would say, that's brilliant.
Absolutely. You mentioned the guitars. I am sad to say that my creative life is currently predominantly channeled into my job, because I'm 2 years into a startup. And I think if you find anybody who has started a business, they'll tell you that work-life balance is very, very hard to maintain, and your creative energies are going into your business. So I have only written about 3 songs in the last 2 years, and normally it would be more like 30. But I can separate the songwriting from the relaxation that comes with playing the guitar. And when I am feeling stressed out and I need to unwind a little bit, I can pick up a guitar and play for half an hour and reset my brain and stop being cross about the thing that's making me mad. Yeah. And so creativity should be channeled into your work. If you're in that chapter of your life where your work needs all of your creative juices, then put it there. But if you're not enjoying putting all of your creativity in your work, change jobs. That's what I did when I had been teaching for nearly 20 years. I was great at it, but I wasn't learning anymore. And it was time for me to go and learn something new. Mm-hmm. And the guitars will always be there. So after I've made my millions and and sold Mindstone for a fortune, or whatever the exit should be, if it's an IPO, the guitars will be there and I'll be able to write songs about my experiences in a startup.
Yeah.
But there are chapters in your life when your creative energies need to be channeled into your work, and it's good to acknowledge that and to celebrate it. And that's where I'm at right now. My creativity is all about Mindstone.
Good stuff. I want to just take a pause and address the people listening or watching. What are you doing to get your creative juices flowing, to get into a meditative state so that you're no longer blocked by your busy radar screen that's distracting you from deep thought? What are you doing to take care of yourself and get a little bit of rest outside of work? I work with too many of you who prioritize that at the bottom of your life, quite frankly. So I think this is excellent advice. And you don't necessarily have to stick to one thing. Find a couple, three things that you love and weave them in if you're the sort of person who likes variety. I also love this idea of habit stacking. You called it anchoring, because it really does work. For example, if you're someone who forgets to take your dietary supplements, put them in the bathroom next to your toothbrush, because you're always going to brush your teeth. And then you see the supplements right next to it as a reminder not to forget to take them. So there's so many different ways that habit stacking can come into our lives, from really simple things to some of the bigger things like training to run marathons, or even creating some new productivity habits at work. Okay, off my soapbox now. Mm-hmm. I have another question related to your guitar. When you play for 30 minutes or however, whatever time it is, what are your favorite songs to play?
Well, I'm embarrassed to admit that I, because I'm a songwriter, I mostly play my own songs. So because I'm self-taught. And I think there's a world of difference, by the way, between doing something purely for pleasure and doing something with a goal in mind, with a particular success criterion that you are working towards. I am not one of those people who advocates that every aspect of your life should be optimized.
Sure.
I don't think, for example, that there is an optimized way of spending your leisure time, because sometimes you just want to goof around and just have some fun. So I am not as good a guitarist as I could be if I was working at it in a consistent, dedicated way. But I have marked that out in my life as something where I am not going to beat myself up if I don't continuously improve, because yeah, I'm doing it for a different goal. So yeah, to answer your question, I am playing my own songs, but at least my own songs, I can say with confidence that I play them better than anyone in the world.
I'm sure you do. I have another question back to Mindstone. Can people do it in other languages besides English?
Well, Mindstone itself as a platform is currently available only in English. Okay. But because it is a suite of tools based upon all of the content that you encounter online, and that content can of course be in any language, many people are able to use Mindstone in other languages. Now, I need to caveat that a little bit, because our automatic transcripts from podcasts and videos are only available in English right now. So I think that the algorithm would fall over if you gave it a transcript in another language. But apart from that, yes, you can use it in your own language. All of the highlighting tools, for example, are editable. So you can set the highlighter labels in your own language if you prefer. Likewise, the flashcard generation, you can set that for yourself. So you can definitely use Mindstone in other languages. It's also the case that we've had people using Mindstone for purposes that we never imagined. A year ago, we had somebody suddenly started uploading huge numbers of Japanese resources. And we were like, are you, we contacted the user. We said, are you Japanese? And they said, no, I'm learning Japanese. I'm finding it really useful for annotating the words that I don't know in these newspaper articles. Then I set myself flashcards to test myself. And we'd never thought of using it as a language platform, but this person just figured out that they could do that. So it's a very general tool right now. Our mission long term is to help everybody in the world. So other languages will be part of that.
Wow, that is fascinating. And I'm sure there'll be even more unique uses discovered for it as you grow your user base.
Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating seeing how people use a tool, because you put it out there. We know who we're solving a problem for. Yeah, we're solving a problem for work athletes. People in the workplace who've got too much content and they want to get value out of it and get on top of their online lives. But we can't stop people with completely different use cases from coming on the platform and having a go. I was talking on customer support with a Turkish student who was using it for writing notes on their favorite song lyrics. They were uploading videos from YouTube and taking notes on their favorite songs. And of course, my attitude to that is that's wonderful. You found a way of using Mindstone for your recreational learning. It's not what we built it for, but it's fun that people are doing that. And it's a sign that we've built a really powerful tool. You can use it in a lot of different ways.
Right. For any kind of content curation that you want to personalize. Yeah, that's great. Like, I think about some of the things I do to save thought pieces, you know, articles or white papers that I like and may want to reference later. They basically go into a folder. So I've got a bunch of folders on leadership topics. So let's just say one of the folders is on diversity, equity, inclusion. I find a great article and I drag it into that folder. And next time I'm going to do any sort of work in that space, I'll open up the folder and relink to the article, which isn't necessarily the most efficient thing to do. So now I can sign up for Mindstone and just drag everything into the app and get the prompts, the space learning prompts, and I'm guessing also do searches by keyword.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can also search by highlighter. So say, for example, you've got a facts and figures highlighter, then you can pull up everything in this particular folder with that particular highlighter label and just see all of those specific points. So it's a great way of drawing together your reading and your research. And then you can take notes on the side of it based upon those resources, and they're automatically linked to the source materials. So it's very flexible. It sounds like you might be a work athlete.
I'm definitely a work athlete.
Yeah.
Okay. And one more question on it, because I'm fascinated by this app and I cannot wait to sign up for it. Can you invite either collaborators or other people on your team to be part of your curated folder system?
Absolutely. So I expect you're familiar with Google Drive.
Yep.
In just the same way, you can share an individual resource and send it by email to somebody else, and then they'll be invited to go through the sign up to see the resource. Or you can invite somebody to a shared workspace, and then everybody in that shared workspace can upload resources, annotate resources, see everything that anybody else has annotated, get into a conversation in the comment threads. So this flow is one that you are familiar with from Google Drive. But what makes it better on Mindstone is that it's not just web pages or docs. You can also have the podcasts and the videos and the email newsletters and the images and the PDFs, and they can all be handled with the same suite of collaboration tools. So
intelligence is miraculous, right?
Absolutely.
Good stuff. All right, before I do my usual summary, any last words of wisdom for leadershifters?
Well, I guess I'm going to say that my learning journey has been one of something of a roller coaster in the last couple of years. And I've got to emphasize that I am just an ordinary guy and I screw up just as much as everybody else, if not more so. And staying humble and admitting that and getting excited about being proved wrong is the best thing that I have done in the last couple of years to help me stay fresh and to learn more and to learn faster. And for your leadershifter audience, I would say that's my message. That's my word of advice, is stay humble and get curious about how you could be wrong, because it's the best and fastest way to stop being wrong and start being right.
Genius. It's along the lines of celebrate failure, because that's what we learn the most from.
Yeah.
We don't forget those times when we screwed up and then we're particularly conscientious about not doing it again. Yeah, excellent piece of advice. All right, so I'm gonna wrap up with kind of the usual highlights of things that I really resonated with from our discussion today. So if you consider yourself a work athlete, and I know almost all of my leadershifters do, then you need to check out Mindstone. Because if you want to keep yourself current on trends in your industry, on necessary things that you need to learn to stay, sort of ahead of the game, And in all likelihood, your learning and development function, if it even exists, is not feeding you enough content and the right content. So this is a way for you to curate your own content and have it reinforced with spaced learning and with the rigor of self-directed informal learning. It's going to stick way more than some sort of lecture, as we talked about early in the podcast, which is a throwback to thousands of years ago in the Roman Empire. And furthermore, this will end up providing a record of your learning so that you can carry that to future roles and future companies, et cetera, to prove what a lifelong learner you are. The statistic that I don't know if I loved it or I was appalled by it, but for kids who were studying at home during the pandemic, it took them only 90 minutes to essentially do all the work that used to be accomplished in an 8-hour school day. So what is that saying about the state of our education system? And this is a little off topic, but I just want to say it. What can you do as parents, aunts, uncles, teachers to make up the difference, right? Because we want our young people to grow up into productive, smart, proactive adults who know how to get off their devices. The other thing that I wanted to just reinforce was this idea of bringing your full self to work. And don't stop if you're back in the office just because you can't see each other's Zoom backgrounds and pets. This idea of creating connected relationships is what it is, the basis for creating trust and psychological safety in the workplace, and everyone benefits. So folks, thank you for listening today. And Patrick, how can people reach you one more time?
It's a very easy website to remember, www.mindstone.com. That's Mindstone, just like in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're not quite sure why Marvel never copyrighted that name, but they didn't, and we've got the trademark. So it's mindstone.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for being on the show today. This was thoroughly enjoyable and actionable for me.
Fantastic.
All right, Thank leadership you for having first. Me. Until next time.